Well, I'm Clint Schock, director of the Oregon State University Malheur Experiment Station, which is right along the border with Idaho and close to Essie's place. So I'm going to speak briefly about three simple examples of needing to be flexible on international programs. My father was probably one of the best fathers for a teenager. He was pretty intolerant of me as a kid. But once I got to be a teenager, he had this philosophy that we learn from our mistakes, make sure that you make some, which meant, you know, well, okay, so you did that, and that's how it turned out. And I think that that's appropriate to these activities, because every one of them had some really major error, some of them on my part or on the part of the grower or whatever. They didn't realize what they were doing. So the idea for unexpected needs for flexibility in international consulting, three examples where you think you know what, or the person or group thinks they know what they want, and it turns out that really they need something else. So the first is one of the centers of the onion industry in the United States is right around the experiment station. Our county is the number one onion producing county, and neighboring Parma, there's the leading world manufacturer of harvesters. Onions are very laborsome to pull up out of the ground and top by hand and put in boxes or bags, and this has been entirely mechanized by various industries, and the place in Parma has the best equipment. So we had a visit from Evandro from Brazil, and he wanted to mechanize his onion harvest. This is a visit later to his place in Santa Catarina in Brazil. So it turned out that there's a number of, so here he is visiting the United States and he wants to buy a harvester and simplify his harvest. Well, in talking with him and examining the situation, he had a whole number of production constraints that had nothing to do with harvesting. The yields were just not anywhere close to the potential because the nutrients weren't being adequately managed. The irrigation wasn't being managed to optimize production. And once he got, and he didn't have any way to deal with bulk harvested onions. If you have totally manual operation, you pull the onions up, you're in a humid climate, you hang the onions up in big sheds, and the air just naturally goes through there. Well, if you put onions into a box and you don't have, you know, or crates or bulk harvest, and you don't have any way to ventilate it or any way to keep the air going into a dryer, then you're going to just create a disaster. So anyway, Evandro worked for 6 years on yield through nutrition and plant population and irrigation, and he made boxes and he made experiments as to how he would handle onions in bulk and solved all those problems. And then once he did, he came back to the United States and bought a harvester. So he's gone into mechanical harvest, but about 7 years after he originally set out to do that, because he had a whole series of problems. And if he had just gone to the mechanical harvest to begin with, he very likely would have gone out of business because he would have the expense of the machine and he would have lost a large part of his crop. Well, one of the consulting jobs that I had was in the Inner Mongolian part of China, up against near Mongolia. And water is very scarce, and there's a need to use it as efficiently as possible, which is something that drip irrigation could do. In working with the people over there, I realized that things were just crazy at harvest time. The potato beds are just all goofed up, and the potatoes were injured and all sorts of things. And it turned out that the wheel spacings of their various equipment and tractors were all different. And the wheel spacing, and some of the tires were really wide and not narrow. So you can imagine, here they are making a leap from a very much a peasant agriculture with an acre or less or slightly more per family to a mechanized agriculture, so that people don't have the tradition or experience of driving and the things that we take for granted in organizing machinery and wheel spacings and all, just were not part of the conscious thinking. Look at the tire widths on that potato harvester. There's no way that you're going to be able to put that through the potato field without doing damage to the potatoes and the sides of the beds. And there was a tremendous loss of yield and quality occurring just because of the distances between the center of the tires from one piece of a machinery to another. And the nutritional applications did not match the nutrient needs. They were not analyzing either the soil or the tissue, so they're applying NPK without consideration of what nutrients were in fact missing. So frequently there was two or three other nutrients that were missing, so there's no way that the NPK fertilizer could have much more than just a marginal effect. And then when they did get the drip system installed, there were components that were incompatible. So to get a drip system to work properly, all the hydrology and everything has to work right. So they were using drip tape with a flow rate that was about twice of what each zone of irrigation could accommodate. So it's necessary to go back and redivide all the zones so that there would be enough pressure so that things would get adequately watered. So there's no way that the system that they were putting in place could function. So it wasn't just the testing drip, but the whole array of unanticipated problems. Well, I talked 2 years ago about the experiences in agriculture outreach in Brazil with poor farmers. But I want to highlight there again how our whole approach was, to begin with, pretty much inappropriate. The area had been colonized into 30 hectares per family. Almost all the people that colonized the area were a mixed racial background of Native American with African slaves from the Northeast. So they had been moved from one part of the country to another, so they had no appropriate technology that came with them. And then there were no financial or health services provided. So I was part of a pilot project to try to address this kind of issue. Folks worked very hard, cleared the forest, tried to mechanize a little bit with horses. So they had their subsistence crops, they had dooryard fruits and vegetables, and they had cash crops of cotton, peanuts, and coffee. So we started working on the crop problems with these folks and introducing soybeans and looking with improved seed of many of the different crops. Improved seed of the rice was super successful through 4-H club type introductions. But there really wasn't going to be much effect of anything because there wasn't any free market. All the inputs and access to the markets were controlled by middlemen. The growers paid 12% per month interest on their loans, and the inflation rate was about 1 to 1.5% per month. So the crop prices paid to growers were very low, input costs were very high. And the banks, even though these people had colonized these areas and received title, the politics were such that the middlemen kept the banks, the middlemen that controlled the various areas, had more power than the people, and so they kept the politics from the banks from recognizing people's title as collateral for loans, which you could say this is like a nightmare. And so really the solution to the problem laid in other areas other than just technology transfer. Technology transfer wasn't going to really go very far. So we tried working with the Poor People's Co-op and find a way to finance 50 families at a fair market rate. And there was over 10,000 farmers in four counties. And at the same time, other people worked on putting pressure on the government to recognize the title and bring in Brazilian banks. So small loans at sustainable costs. And there was a local co-op of over 400 people that had gotten together politically, but they didn't function. They couldn't operate. And so by getting a little bit of capital from Canada to finance a few farmers, then other companies would gave our small co-op credit. And this is our co-op president working hard on the books. And people starting getting input costs at low prices. And then in the harvest were organized, and the growers got a lot higher returns by marketing their products together. So from all these projects, you know, there's just really many beautiful, gracious people in the world. And the initial problem that's described to you, be it by a grower that visits your station or a consulting project that you're on or a project that you're working on, initial problem may not really be what is the problem. The problem could be elsewhere. A consultant must examine all the factors that at play, including social factors and the market chain. And if you work on the key factors, these people, even if they don't have a lot of education, will make very rational decisions and adopt change that works. So I want to thank you very much. So are there any questions?
In a location like that you have tons of recommendations for Malheur County, Parma, etc., will you go with that, say, heavy soils and information almost zero as far as deep analysis and soil analysis? How do you deal with it?
Well, you mean how do we go from our situation where we have lots of information?
How do you make any decision on, that's what I'm most interested in, nutrient management?
Right. Well, both in Brazil and in China, we ended up really pushing things to get help the people connect with the laboratories within their country. And so we didn't know where the labs were. We didn't know where there was somebody who would receive a sample by, you know, overnight mail or whatever and actually get the results and send it back. But in both cases, we're able to find somebody. And they might not do the analysis exactly the same way, but pretty soon you're able to figure out what the limiting factors are and get it done. So Evandro has managed to do that in Brazil and find a lab that's a long ways away from him, but he sends the samples and gets the results back quickly. And from Inner Mongolia, they were sending the samples to a more developed part of China and getting results back quickly. And so as it's really hard to begin with, because in China it was hard to find the manufacturers of specific micronutrients and other things. But once you find them, then you've got the network and you can connect, and you can expect that if you're short of zinc or you're short of something else, then you'll need more or less of it the next year. So it's easier to have a network and get supplied. So both those were overcome. In both cases, since they're big countries, there was somebody providing that service somewhere. It wasn't obvious. In a smaller country, it could be really, really tough.
Yeah. Working with, in this case, 50 independent farming families or groups, did you ever see the opportunity where there could be some specialization, where they all weren't growing the same crops?
Well, you know, that would be really good. But in fact, there was probably 10,000 families in that area, and they were all trying to grow for cash crops: cotton, peanuts, or coffee. And only people that had land with special topography were growing the coffee, because you had better microclimate. But subsequent to our work, they've gone in with silkworms and pigs and chickens and other things. Today those people have organized a new rural small farmer training center that they just got inaugurated last year, and so they're teaching themselves about vegetable crop production and specialized fruit trees, and they've got a cassava factory and things like that. So your point's well taken. One more is all we got, because then we have a meeting. Yes?
Did you see any changes from the government to support the market? As you told, there is less support from government to control the market than you think. After all work we done, that there was any changes to government to have good relationship between people and the government?
Well, when in the specific case of our project where we had 52 families financed with money from the United Church of Canada, there's all sorts of politics, because there are various church groups that wanted to steal the money, you know, within our own colleagues, to divert the money to some other church activity. And so that happened repeatedly. But the good news was that since 100% of these people paid back their loans each year, it was a really strong example for the government. And it undermined the middleman control. Because say if you guys are the 50 that are working with me, and your friends and neighbors that are in between these other empty seats here are out in other counties, if they're only going to get about 60% of their value, or if they're going to have to pay double the input, then anything that they don't have to deliver to the middlemen, they don't. And so you end up having tremendous amounts of product funneled through the co-op, and tremendous amount of sales funneled through the co-op. So then everybody else in the whole region has to accompany the co-op's prices. So even though you're only working with a very few people, you change the dynamics of the whole marketing system. And then the middlemen are almost forced to become agriculture service providers rather than people that are holding on to the prison in a way. And even the middlemen then have interest that the federal government comes in and provides bank loans at a reasonable cost so that they don't have to assume that risk. So they can make a small profit on buying and selling. There was a co-op and it didn't function. It was just on paper. I guess this goes back to my father. My father was an astute business person. And so I'd learned a lot about business, and so I taught it to some of these poor people that I was working with. And one of the colonists that was out in the countryside was a guy by the name of Moses. Interesting name. And Moses had worked in an accounting firm when he was a young guy before he got married. And so he was a godsend because he could understand the business dealings and making deals, and with supplying companies and whatever. So he really helped a lot. That the president was more of a problem because the president wanted his friends and cronies to get the loans. And the political problem for me was, having worked with all these people and gone from farm to farm to farm to farm, I had to figure out which of these people really had in their head the idea that they were going to change their way of life. Because if they were in it just for the loan and for their short-term personal benefit, then that wouldn't mean that they'd be sure to pay. We need to have the people that wanted to change how their community worked. And fortunately, we got 52 of them. And so then that put a lot of pressure on the government to come in with bank loans. And the government built a bank agency in each of the four counties that had been this colony, and came in with funded over 1,000 small farms in the third year. I'm out of time.